Welcome, everybody. This is Mark Hummel, and this is Mark Hummel's Harmonica Party. And I am in Trinidad, Colorado, with my buddy Tad Robinson, who hails from, are you from Indianapolis or just outside?
Well, I live in a small college town, Greencastle, Indiana, now. I'm originally from New York City,
way back in the day.
And went out to the Midwest when I was about college age, and I've stayed in Chicago, Indiana, ever since then. So my roots are out in the East Coast, but it's been a long time. I moved away from New York when I was about 18.
And for those that don't know, Tad is one of the preeminent soul and blues vocalists in the country, if not the world. He's recorded many recordings for both Del Mar and Severn Records. Solo recordings, and you had there was a recent Del Mar project you did with Ken Sadak.
We did kind of a reunion when I used to live in Chicago. I worked a lot with Steve Freund, Ken Sadak, Harlan Turson, Marty Binder, among other people.
Right.
That's when I worked a lot with Dave Spector. And so somebody got the idea a few years ago to get that team back together, and we, the Del Mar Records is at 4121 North Rockwell Avenue in Chicago. And so we thought we would name the band Rockwell Avenue Blues Band. In case people didn't get that private joke. But so we reunited at Rockwell Avenue at the Del Mar Studios, and we cut a record. And it's always great to play with people like Steve Freund and that rhythm section of Harlan Turson and Marty Binder. They've worked with hundreds of artists. We were in a band together called Big Shoulders.
Oh,
back
I
in
forgot
the
about
80s.
That.
And
yeah.
That was really Ken's band. And I was a singer in that band. And
now, wasn't there a harp player in that band?
Ron Soren.
Right.
Great harmonica player. Yeah, it was a really interesting kind of an Americana album. And some blues, there was some kind of folky aspect to it. And Ken was most of all the writer for that band.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so we go way back. So this is fun to be in Colorado.
And you've done this festival numerous times.
I have. Yeah. This festival started back in 1999.
This is Trinidadio.
Yeah, the Trinidadio Blues Festival in Trinidad, Colorado. You know, 23 years later.
Yeah.
And they're still going strong. And tonight you'll do the James Cotton tribute with the great band that you have assembled here. And Sugar Ray Rayford is here. And
we had a great time last night with you on the gig.
When you're thrust into that kind of situation, you know, a lot of harp players do that. You know, it's just like show up and you have your bag of tricks and you have the backing band. But it's like flying without a net, you
right.
know, to a certain extent.
Right.
But you know, people speak the same language, and they know,
yeah.
you know, they kind of can, you know, great musicians like what you have with you here with
Rico
McFarlane and Tom Holland and the Mack
guys
brothers.
That you already knew.
Well, I knew Rico and Tom.
Right.
I did not know the Mack
the
brothers,
rhythm
this
section.
Great
yeah.
rhythm section. But I've known Rico and Tom for years
mm-hmm.
because of our Chicago connection. Because I lived, like I said, grew up in New York, then I moved to Indiana, my wife Amy and I moved to Chicago for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
what years did you move?
That was like 84 to 94, something like
that. That was a good time for, there was still quite a bit.
When I moved to Chicago within, you know, I was stocking shelves at a liquor store
mm-hmm.
and kind of, you know, trying to get one foot in front of the other. But very soon after that, there was a lot of club work that was just there. And, you know, you meet the talent pool in a given city. Like, that's when I met my brothers, you know, Steve Freund and Dave Spector and Ken Sadak and John McDonald and Marvin Jackson and any number of people, Bob Hallage, who just various people worked with Larry Bell on guitar, worked with Byther Smith a few times, you know,
mm-hmm.
just the usual suspects in that talent pool. And there was club work to be had. I mean, I was working like 5, 6, 7 clubs within the first year.
Wow.
You know, of living there. It wasn't, I mean, there was a pretty thriving blues scene. I thought, you know, some people would say, oh, it was nothing like it was, you know.
In the 60s.
But, yeah, right. But, you know, for my purposes and getting to a new city and getting my feet wet in that scene. And then Dave Spector kind of recruited me to be the singer and harp player in his band.
Right.
This was about 92.
I know. I met him in 89 when I first went to Chicago and I saw Freund and Sunnyland, and he was there that night.
Okay.
And he kind of showed me around. I remember the first 2-3 days I was in Chicago.
Yeah. Dave, you know, he was born and bred in Chicago, and he knows that city, and he has a lot of influence in that city and the blues world,
but he was kind of
a great player. Well, he was just starting out.
He was sort of one of Freund's proteges.
Yeah, right.
When I met him.
Yep. He was taking some lessons with Steve, mm-hmm. and then he became, you know, he went off and developed his own voice as a guitar player, which is something that
hard to do.
It is because so many guitar players, you know, end up sounding like maybe like their heroes, but they don't have their own distinctive style. I mean, that's hard on any instrument.
Yeah,
I would, you know, but he
really kind of went toward a jazz.
Yep,
kind of a jazz.
And he writes really great little instrumentals and almost like soundtracky, very groovy, jazzy instrumentals. And he's gone on to record with so many people. But he gave me kind of my start with Del Mar, bringing me in to do that record. Duplicity, where we did that, and then shortly after, I remember Bob Kester at Del Mar said, "You won't make a ton of money at this label, but you'll go to Europe, and it'll be a good stepping stone for other things in your career."
Right.
And within about 4 or 5 months, we did go and do a live record in Europe. We did the Bremenal in Bremen, Germany,
right,
and did a live record there. And we met up with our friends, the Blue Shacks.
Oh, yeah,
a German outfit that has become like one of the biggest on the continent over there. They're a pretty big blues band there. Great players, great friends of mine.
Right.
And it's interesting because when you start meeting musicians in other parts of the world, then you get their little flavor. I mean, even in the States, you know, you go out to the West Coast and they play a certain way. You go to Chicago and they play a certain way. And, you know, I like to... I like to just hear what's going on in different scenes, and I've been fortunate enough that, you know, some folks will have me as a guest, you know, and so I can go and kind of venture out and play my music with other people. So that's been really a gift. So Bob Kester was right. I mean, the Del Mar connection set that ball in motion. And then all of a sudden, I'm going to Germany, I'm going to France, Belgium, Holland, Scandinavia, Eastern Europe. And one thing, it's just like playing anywhere. Once you do a gig, then someone hears you and they go, oh, can you come and do our gig?
And hopefully
they ask you back, and that you build a circuit, you know.
And you just got back from a year.
I was in Finland about 3 weeks ago in Estonia, and we did a nice 10-day run. We did eight shows in 9 days. I had air trouble, got there a day late, but thank heaven, you usually pad your trip so that that extra day up in front, and I needed it because I would have missed the Estonia Festival, which was kind of the linchpin of the whole trip. That was that was really the sweetest gig, and it was first.
Right.
And it involved two flights, a drive, and a ferry.
Wow.
And everything, the timing had to be perfect. If the ferry schedule had been just off, I would have probably missed being there in time. You know? So that's stress that no one needs.
That is,
But, knock on wood, most of the travels somehow come together, as you know.
I mean, right.
You know, you just have to just hope that the connections can be made and that everybody shows up. Because that would have been disappointing to miss the sweetest gig.
No kidding. And not
to mention the repercussions financially that, you know, there would have been a lot of, just kind of a mess. And then you just did something with Ray and Sugar and Ray.
Before and before the Finland thing and the right. Estonia thing, about 3 weeks earlier, I was in Italy doing a blues workshop,
right,
and jam sessions, as it was billed, in near Torino, Italy, in Castagnola Piemonte, Italy, which is a small town, but it's the home of the great Hammond player, Alberto Marsico.
Right,
really a treasure in Italy.
He's great. He's amazing.
He's a wonderful player, great accompanist for a singer.
Yeah.
I mean, just really in tune, sensitive musician to work with. But he puts on this blues workshop where most of the people that went to it were pro, like professional musicians or really good musicians, but who wanted to learn more about blues, R&B, American music. So there are Europeans in Germany, France, Holland, you know.
Yeah.
But who came to Italy, to this very scenic, peaceful town, to stay for a week and have these intense workshops. So, you know, Duke Robillard and Alex Schultz handled the guitar workshops, and they had a lot of students. They probably had 20 students or more to split between them. And then Sugar Ray Norcia and I did the vocals and the harmonica workshops. Mudcat Ward handled the bass.
Right.
Mark Tejera was the drum coach, and Alberto did keys.
Right.
So you had people really, you know, for a week, really steeped in this learning and sharing, and then jam sessions. And then at the end of the week, the students give a concert, and then the teachers give a concert.
Sounds amazing.
So it was really nice for me to be able to, you know, work with Duke Robillard.
Sure.
I did, you know, four songs with that unit, with Mudcat and Mark and Duke and Alex and Alberto.
Yeah.
And
Alex Schultz you've worked with.
And Alex Schultz. Well, we go back because we both grew up in New York, and we used to play music as teenagers.
I didn't know that.
Alex, when I met him, he was about 17, 18. He was playing a big hollow body, and he was very immersed in like Tal Farlow, George Benson, more legit.
Well, he took lessons from George Barnes.
Right, he studied with George Barnes.
That's amazing.
Right, so he was really phrasing and playing in more of a. I was trying to think of Kenny Burrell as another influence.
Yeah,
but so, and then I kind of came along and was blowing harp, and he's like, you know, what's that? And he started hearing Robert Lockwood and people like that, you know. He started hearing Sonny Boy Williamson,
right,
and not so much Little Walter, because I at that point I was playing more like more in a Junior Wells, Sonny Boy Williamson, you know, Rice Miller vein. And so he started hearing what you do behind harp as a guitar player, which, as you know, is so integral to what we do. And what the way I look at it is, so many of the great harmonica instrumentals, you know, things like Off the Wall or Juke, or you know anything you want to name about it, they're almost less harmonica solos as duets, because what the guitar part is doing,
very interwoven.
So it's like you can't really play that without having the information in the band and the band itself. It's more than just, you know, the guitar, but that's so crucial.
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
And so Alex was really, I mean, I planted that seed in him to think of, okay, if Tad's going to blow harmonica, what should I be playing?
Right.
And then he learned some of those things, like from King Biscuit Time, or from the R. Hooley, Big Walter,
who's
with Johnny Young, or,
you
know, just hearing what does a guitar player play? How does he comp behind harp? And then, of course, you know, he became the guitarist with Rod Piazza and
William Clark. Yeah, his playing with William Clark was amazing.
Yeah. So he became like, he took that and became, you know, an expert, so to speak, on that, which is such a small niche in the music world. I mean, you take the music world, then you take the blues world, then you take the blues world that includes harmonica
and guitar. It's tiny,
but he became really good at that. That skill.
And you know, you could look around the world and I mean, there are some states, there's probably not a guy that really is good at
no,
that.
So you have
to
right.
skip like three or four states over. There's a guy in,
that's
you know,
right. yeah, it's
in San Francisco.
Rare, it's
you
a
know.
Very rare thing, yeah.
Yeah, sure and, you know, so it's kind of inside baseball, but it is interesting.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard for, if you're doing this kind of music, like in my town where I live in Indianapolis, we have Paul Holtman, and then there's a guy named Gordon Bonham. They're both very established and great musicians and great players. And they know like that genre.
Right.
But if like when I'm doing gigs locally, if I can't get either one of those guys,
you're kind of
then
screwed.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few others. I'm being a little harsh, but
yeah.
But yeah, sometimes you might as well just leave the harp home. You know.
Well, you're really known you're known so much as a vocalist because of your soul vocals. And I mean, you know, at the same time, it's like you started in blues, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I did, and I kind of branched off, and I've been playing harp since I was, you know, a little kid.
Just, right.
You know,
and you're a great harp player.
Thank you, man. I mean,
yeah,
you
really don't give yourself the credit you should be.
Because
you really
I
a fine
hear
player.
The difference, you know. I mean, I really admire some of these guys, like yourself. And Kyle Rowland last night, I mean.
He was pretty mind-blowing last night.
He's
yeah.
got the whole, and he has a nice way of presenting it.
Right.
You know, it's user-friendly. I mean, people are drawn to it rather than like, you know, like this. They're like,
it's so unusual now for young people.
Yeah.
You know, someone in their 20s or 30s right. to really be into what we're into. It's a rarity.
And I think that he has the capacity of maybe drawing in
that's what we hope
20
for,
somethings and 30 somethings like himself to go, oh, I dig what's this?
Right.
Because
right, exactly.
many people have never heard it.
That's
you know?
Exactly what
yeah,
it
you
is,
know,
yeah.
this great American art form that is right here that was created, invented here, and then you have a lot of Americans who
don't even know what it is.
They're not aware. I mean, they're not even aware of the Mount Rushmore figures of the genre.
Right.
Like they,
right.
you know, they might have heard of a handful of them.
They
might have heard of B.B. King. Probably
heard of maybe Muddy Waters.
Muddy. I mean, and and then so, you know, in the modern day, maybe they've heard of some of the Guitar Hero guys. Which is great, and I know that a lot of those folks, I mean, Stevie Ray always tried to educate people about Albert King and all these other people, and Joe does the same thing from what I understand. I'm not that knowledgeable about what he does, but I know that he is self-aware enough that he promotes where the music came from.
Right.
And includes people like, you know, Kirk, and other people in his in what he's doing.
Yeah.
So like I'm at a place right now where I could really use an injection of like 10 or 12 new vehicles for the band.
Right.
And it gets to that point, but it's not easy, you know, coming up with it's basically a whole new show.
Right.
And so, you know, it's time maybe to make another record, which is always it really helps when you make a new record because you rejuvenate the whole thing and you basically have a new set or a new show. You know.
Now, you generally work, you pretty much seem to do a lot of your recordings with the same group of musicians, Steve Gomes on bass.
Well, Severn Records, run by David Earle, great person who's been huge for my career and a man with great ears and great skill as a producer, a great guitar player. He's a really good guitar player. So David Earle's concept with the Severn label, it was for some of the artists, not for all, but for several, for Daryl Newlish, for me, for even Kim Wilson when he came to the label, and Lou Pride, and several others, was to put together a kind of a house band.
Right.
In the mold of a Stax or a High Records where David, you know, had his go-to players that he felt really comfortable with and knew that they were eclectic enough and skilled enough to not to make the sound always the same, but to have guys that he really worked well with. So he had Rob Stupka from the Twin Cities on drums. Great that goes back to our discussion of Gary Primich. I mean, I was
I first heard Rob play with Gary, I remember, and it was like, I was going, God, this guy's incredible.
Yeah, and Rob is so, I mean, versatile. I mean, he could play that straight ahead stuff behind Gary, but then he could do stuff behind Daryl Newlish, which was straight up soul.
Yeah.
And anyway, so he had Rob do the on the drums, and he had Steve Gomes on a lot of the records, and Steve was kind of a co-producer and also a co-writer on a lot of the stuff. He would bring, I mean, Steve, he is a writing fool. I mean, he writes great songs. So, and then he had, in the guitar chair, he had like Johnny Moeller involved, which, in fairness to Daryl, Rob, Steve, and Johnny were Daryl's band.
Right, that was Texas Heat.
So, but you know, they became this great session band for David.
Right.
And then he added other people. I mean, Willie Henderson came along with horn arrangements. Mm-hmm. Great Willie Henderson from Chicago, who did Tyrone Davis, If I Could Turn Back the Hands of Time, and Can I Change My Mind. Those were million sellers for Willie. As a producer and arranger. And then on the keyboards, we had Benji Parecki and Kevin Anker from Indianapolis. So it became like this, a core unit. About four out of the last five records I did for Severn were with the Severn House Band, adding Alex Schultz on guitar. So David, like David Earl's thing was, you know, I want to use my house band, but if my artist has a particular ringer that he wants to bring in.
Right.
And in my case, it was Alex, because Alex Schultz and I have made a lot of records together.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex produced my first record that Severn took.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Did You Ever Wonder was a record that Alex produced on me. And then David, and then Alex said, you know, this guy David Earl in Maryland might be interested, and then he was. Well, and then David put that one out, but it was Alex's.
So you've been working with David for how long?
We did our first record in 2005.
So 17 years.
Yeah. And the last record I did recorded in Memphis with the High Rhythm Section. I got a grant from the Indianapolis Arts Council to go to Memphis. The original grant was, it's called an artist renewal grant. So they said, we want you to just go away from your day-to-day.
Wow.
We're gonna give you money to go away and like renew your creativity. And my thing was, I wanna go to Memphis because I wanna be where, you know, Memphis Soul was born, and Southern Soul.
Yeah.
And then I spoke to Scott Bomar and the great producer down in Memphis, who just co-wrote William Bell's new single and produced a lot of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to John Namath and other friends, and they said, man, while you're down in Memphis with this grant, why don't you, they said to me, you could hire some of the greats that are still there to make a record.
Right.
Like maybe make three or four tracks.
Right.
So then I mentioned it to David Earl, and he said, you know what, man, I'll match the grant, and why don't you make 10 tracks so we have a record. Then I had to go back to the Arts Council and go, you know, this thing, would it be all right if I don't just go down there and like sit back and listen to music and juke joints, and, you know, but if I actually make a record that'll be a commercial product, because that was a little outside of the grant.
Right.
And they said, put it in an email. You have our blessing.
Wow.
And so they allowed me to go down. And so I ended up working with the High Rhythm Section, basically.
That's awesome.
So it was Charles Hodges, Leroy Hodges. Charles Hodges on Hammond, Leroy Hodges on bass, and Howard Grimes on drum. Basically, I had Al Green's band and Ann Peebles' band, Otis Clay's band, but without Teeny Hodges on guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And Joe Restivo had become kind of one of the go-to guys in Memphis.
Hmm.
Great guitar player who kind of channels that
vibe,
Memphis vibe.
Right.
He's in the Love Light Orchestra.
Oh, right, with John.
That's the guitar player. So he really has a great thing. So and then I brought Kevin Anker from home, from Indianapolis, to join in this venture. Mm-hmm. We spent a week at Scott Bomar's studio, Electrophonic, on Main Street in downtown Memphis, and we made my most recent record, Real Street.
Man, I can't wait to hear it.
Well, that's been out. That's been out.
Oh, okay.
That I could turn that
out
for sure.
Okay,
yep,
good.
Yep. So we did that. It was funny because we did a tune that Ken Sadak and Kevin Anker and I had written called Changes. It's the opening track. Mm-hmm. And when we were presenting it to the high rhythm section, you know, you always want to allude to some other tracks so they know, well, what's the vibe?
Right.
So we said, it's kind of like trying to live my life without you, Otis Clay. And they go,
Oh,
we were on that.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, so they're like, we know that group.
Yeah.
And that kept happening.
That's amazing.
I mean, I brought another very obscure tune called Search Your Heart.
Yeah.
And they had played on the original back then.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that kept happening. Yeah. But, you know, it's a small world, I guess, when you're that much a part of the fabric of a scene like the high rhythm section were, that if they weren't on the record you're talking about, they were at the session maybe listening to their buddy, or they were aware of it, you know.
That's amazing.
Did
you know Otis Clay pretty well?
Not really well. I knew him.
You know him. Yeah.
And Otis was the type of person, I think, that even if you knew him in passing, he made you feel
like you were a real friend.
He looked you in the eye, and he was one of the most, you know, beautiful, spiritual people.
Yeah.
And he sang background on one of my records. David Earle called him in because Willie Henderson was doing horns, and Willie Henderson and Otis were very close.
Yeah.
And then when I actually was producing something for House of Blues label in Chicago, we did a tribute to Janis Joplin, and Otis was called in to do Peace of My Heart.
Wow.
The great Jerry Ragoboy classic.
Right.
And which he killed.
And, well, I bet.
Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful. And I
That was Aretha's sister that did the original of that.
Oh, Irma Franklin. Irma Franklin.
I think so, yeah.
Oh,
wasn't
it?
Yeah.
I think you're right. Yeah, that was. And what a great. Yeah, the original.
The original is
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, Otis did that, and I brought in. I kind of assembled the band for that project, which was Kevin McKendry, Alex Schultz. I don't know. It was a bunch of Chicago guys, plus some friends that I brought in.
Right.
And they cut behind Otis. So that was another experience I had with Otis Clay in a professional setting.
You know,
I was producing that track for some reason. I ended up getting a call, and they said, could you put the band together? And the record was going to have Otis Clay. It was going to have Coco Taylor and Etta James did Ball and Chain. And
did you say you produced this record?
I co-produced it.
Wow.
Although the Coco Taylor and the Lonnie Brooks tracks, Bruce Iglauer did.
Okay.
That was done separately.
It was done
separately. He didn't want to come in to this band that we had assembled.
Right.
But I produced the Otis Clay track. The other producer, Ira Antelis, who I knew through the Chicago production scene. He did a lot of jingle music.
Now, didn't you do jingles for a while?
Yeah. When I lived in Chicago, when I moved there, I started doing blues clubs.
Right.
And then one day I just got a call and they said, can you come into the studio? We're doing a session. And I this was a world that I wasn't really aware of.
Right.
So I just showed up to the address, you know, this fancy area near Michigan Avenue, you know, all these nice buildings, and walk in, and there's this beautiful studio, and it was for a McDonald's commercial.
I had
to sing, you know, The Good Time, Great Taste of McDonald's or something.
Right.
And I did that, and the next thing I know, it's on the air, you know, playing nationally on TV and everything. And then one thing led to another, and for a number of years, I was in that world where you're getting called to do session work. And, you know, I always say, you know, people say, oh, you know, I'm a purist. I only do this. I only do that. You know, a lot of the musicians I know, you're a gigger.
Yeah,
you get called to do a session.
Yeah.
And you get called to put a tuxedo on and croon. yeah. at a wedding or whatever. I mean, I need to work.
Right.
And so the way I looked at it was, this is part of the way musicians are paid in this culture.
That's right.
So I did that. Yeah, I was doing that for, I did it for about 15 years.
Wow.
When I say that, I mean, I was active, like doing a lot of work. You know, if someone calls me right now, I'll go do it.
Right.
But it's just that phase.
But you were
gone.
Kind of in that circle. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, in Chicago, the production scene, I was in that.
Right.
And I was on a session one time that Sugar Blue was on. I was singing and he was blowing harp. And I was on commercials with, various people over there. Skunk Baxter was on a commercial I did. Various people in Chicago. Sometimes in Chicago, like, if they were doing a commercial and they wanted a bluesy feeling, well, you're in Chicago. They could call anyone.
Yeah.
You know, so they had a great talent pool.
Sure.
You know,
of course.
So in that respect, they didn't need to call like session musicians
right.
who were going to read a chart.
Right.
They just can call someone from the blues scene and say, hey, dude, you know, set up a groove and, you know, we're going to be selling Cheerios over it, whatever. You know, I remember my friend Jimmy Thackeray said, that's when I knew the demise of our genre was upon us, when I heard, you know, macaroni and cheese being sold with blah, 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 you know.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, now hip hop or, you know, is in that. I mean, you can't escape it.
Well, and the thing it is popularity. It's kind of what comes with popularity.
Yeah. And we want our genre to be in the
public
line consciousness and just, you know.
But you're right. I mean, you're right about what you were talking about earlier about how small the slice is. Of what it is we do. I mean, we're in this really kind of, you know, it's almost like something like old country or know, bluegrass or something like that. I mean, it's not this giant, you know, thing like rock and roll or...
Right. I almost feel like whenever I...
Or rap or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, I feel I know you.
Right.
Because we are in the same
in the
kind
same
of
circle,
community
yeah.
and we, you know, I'm hip to records you've been on.
Right.
And you're hip to, if not records I've been on, then Sidemen. He plays
well,
with Tad.
I kind of found out about you through Freund in 89 or 90.
Okay, right.
Because
Steve and I go, you know, so far back. You know, I came up, you know, as a child of the 60s and listening to my brother's record collection.
Right.
You know, and listening to, you know, when I was coming up, it was, you know, on the radio, Sam Cooke, Ray Charles, Eric Burdon, you know, the Beatles, the British Invasion, Motown, Stax, Bobby Darin. You know, you still had the older.
You must be the same age as me.
I'm 66.
Yeah, we're the same age.
56.
Yep.
So you know that was
same
my
age.
Yeah, that was, you know, my upbringing.
Yeah,
yeah, and that, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, I wanna sing.
Right. Yeah, I heard all the rock groups. That was kind of what got me into blues. Was I heard, you know, the psychedelic bands in San Francisco, and through them I found out about all the blues guys.
Yeah, and of course, you know,
I heard it on the radio earlier.
Yeah.
I heard you know, Slim Harpo and Jimmy Reed.
Oh, okay.
65 or something.
I never got that dose.
It was only because it was on R&B radio.
Okay.
For some reason.
Because what I was hearing, you know, in New York City on, you know, basically on AM radio then.
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
You know, you'd hear, you know, the Tijuana Brass followed by, you know, the Beatles, followed by the Supremes, followed by the Four Tops, followed by Bobby Darin. You know, those were pop records.
Yeah.
And it was very eclectic, really.
Right. Yeah, this was more R&B radio in L.A.
We weren't hip to that level. That came later for me.
Right.
Graduating.
I actually saw Buddy and Junior when I was 12.
Oh,
the very first concert I ever went to.
Oh, wow. That explains a lot.
I mean, they were all these rock acts on it, but they had Buddy and Junior.
Oh.
They had Albert King, but they also had Country Joe and the Fish and the Mothers and the Byrds.
That's a concert now.
Yeah.
Woo.
Big Brother and the Holding Company, all these groups.
And this was
in Pasadena, the Rose Bowl.
Nice. Yeah, Buddy and Junior were really happening back then.
They were really happening, but they were like dressed in sharkskin suits, and he was doing all his James Brown stuff, and I couldn't wrap my head around that at 12 years old.
Yeah, well, Junior.
Yeah.
He was, one thing about him, he was a very sparse harmonica player. He was a just great few players.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I love his playing, but yeah. he would really, I mean, tasteful to
right.
to a fault, like some tunes, right. like that famous Viet Cong blues
right,
on
right,
Vanguard.
Right.
Like his, the whole moment, the whole solo is like one note.
Right, right, I mean, right.
You know, and that's like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
The power behind that.
Yeah.
I that, you know.
Yeah, they were really kind of the first modern blues.
He had a lot
blues
of restraint. Yeah. Yeah, I remember he told me that too. He said, you know, sometimes the best thing you can do with that harp is lay it down.
Right.
Because now, I don't know if that was a backward, you know, people saying, stop playing, bro. You don't sound it. But I took it to mean restraint.
Right.
Like, you know, listening to the spaces, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because we met, I was in an Indiana band and we met at Teresa's.
Right.
We came up and came to Teresa's and he had us come up and sit in and he was
cool.
real sweetheart and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a good guy.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, there's not a lot of them that I met that weren't. I mean,
right.
When I came to Chicago, you know, the establishment blues players, I mean, there was nothing but welcoming. I mean, I didn't feel like ostracized or an outsider. A lot of musicians worry about their own employment, so they're not going to diss you. It's like, this dude might hire me.
Right, you know? right.
I think he's not very good, but he might hire me. No, I mean,
right.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's
musicians,
true. Yeah.
Sidemen are generally going to be
gracious.
They're going to realize that, you know, this guy might be one of the people who hires me 5, 8, 10 times a year.
Exactly.
In a community like Chicago, where there's a lot of work, and then there's a talent pool, and you end up working with everybody.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's what's interesting. I mean, one of the things I love about, you know, hanging with the Cotton guys or you or, mm-hmm. you know, all the Chicago people, because I've always been fixated with Chicago. I mean, because of the blues.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you realize there's this, and it's the same in the Bay. We all work with each other.
Right.
Everyone knows everybody because of that.
That's a scene that's really, like, just become so strong.
It's thriving.
I mean, with Kid Anderson and you. And
Aki Kumar has had a lot to do with it. Yeah.
And the, you know, they've really injected a...
Yeah, the like South Bay. There's something that happened in the South Bay with when Kid started doing the studio and Aki started doing, like, these jam sessions and stuff. It just kind of has blown up in terms of the amount of, and there's a lot of young people. Again, we're talking about young people. There's a lot of youngsters in the area that are really starting to kind of get out there.
And I'd really like to get out there. Yeah. And I don't know, I have a fantasy of getting with those guys and
with
doing
Kid
some
and
recording and
getting
his studio set up because
they're perfect
this
for
stuff.
You.
I mean, it all is, you need to bring the goods, you know, no matter who you're working with, you know, you need to bring songs that can inspire the cats. Otherwise, you know, just saying 12 bar blues, start on the 5 in the key of, you know,
it's not really going to get it.
You better be some bad monster guy to just really get over this. You have to have something.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, but the thing is, there are teams in different parts of the world. Even,
that's right.
It'd be fun to work with. And so it gives you an incentive to, you know, get up every day and keep being creative.
Well, like we were talking about the thing about Europe. And I mean, it was interesting when you're talking about, you know, you're working with Erkan and his family and that group and how working with a band over in Europe is different than bringing your own guys over. What would you say the difference is? Because I found that experience interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, it has to be said that oftentimes it's a financial consideration.
Right.
Like there are tours or festivals that say, look, we love you, but we can't afford to fly your five-man unit out and house you and hotel you and feed you and have you here for a week. I mean, so, you know, and that sometimes gets involved with how big you are, what your stature is as an artist.
Right.
I mean, I'm at this place where sometimes I'll, you know, the festival is such that they want the whole thing.
Right. Yeah.
But other times I will get proposals from folks over there. It's like, hey, we'd like to bring you, but we have a great group and they have backed many artists and they will learn your stuff and, you know, you'll get there a day early, you'll rehearse,
They're conversant in blue, you know,
which it didn't used to be.
And some of these folks, I mean, look, Kit Anderson
he's from Norway, right?
And
Igor Prado.
Yeah. Igor Prado is one of, you know, these up and coming. I have found that
Tommy Leno and them.
In Finland, they're great,
great musicians.
They're great musicians, and they're really wrapped up in American roots.
They sure
music.
Are, yeah.
And they, I mean, they can talk all day about, you know, the recordings and get deep into it.
Right.
They have a great appreciation for it, and they play the stuff for keeps. I mean,
they sure do.
I mean, I've heard Kim Wilson talk about some of the European musicians that he's hip to, and just totally give it up and say these cats are the real deal.
Yeah, they are.
You know, so it's not me saying it.
Right.
It's some of the people who are in the higher echelon who are saying, yeah, these cats can really play American blues well. So
my friend Wes Weston is
great harp player. My age is showing. There are some names that I really want to throw out of my European cohort.
The Suitcase Brothers.
They're
the other ones.
I mean, they're. But my Finnish friends, who I just worked with, Jaska Prepula and Jukka Paavola, Janne Kulavara. I mean, and Tommy Leno and people like that. And then in Germany, the Blues Shacks, you know, the Alt Brothers, and just go on down the list.
Yeah.
The experience is really good because basically I have brothers over there that, you know, are really great friends of mine now.
Right.
That I tour with occasionally. They learn, the Erkan Özdemir and his sons. Erkan is my agent, but he's also a great bass player. And he's put together a band that he can book me for a couple weeks and he can back me.
Right.
And he's wonderful. And Alberto Marsico, we were talking about, the Hammond player in Italy.
Yeah, I met him.
All these little cells. I just did a record with Lars Kutschka, who's a German guitarist from Dresden, and he's a beautiful player.
Yeah.
He works a lot with Sherry Williams, and who's an American who goes over there to tour. So it's all part of making a living in this business for me.
And you know, here's what I like, is when you're hanging with the European musicians, you get this real taste of the country don't get when you're in your insulated American band.
It's a different way to tour. Yeah, it is. It's a great way to tour. I mean, even when you're an American band touring, your driver usually is that person who's going to help you with the locals. And another thing is, you hear the dirt on the Americans who were bad. We didn't treat the cats right over there.
Which we love to hear.
You know, it's like, you got to watch your P's and Q's because, you know, the next thing you know, these guys are like headlining festivals here.
Right.
You know, and you're like, can I work with you? You know, exactly. So, I mean, it's all family. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I like the experience. It's a different animal than having a band that is one for all for one.
Right.
And that's fantastic too. And nothing can beat that cohesion and that strength and power walking out on the stage. And
That's what I really got from the Cotton guys, hanging around with them, because they really are like, they are a band of brothers. I mean, these guys had worked together so much with James, and it was like, man, he knew how to put together a band.
And
like
I'll tell you, man, you do that repertoire so solid. I mean,
I
saw it on video. I already heard you do like Creeper I mean, James Cotton, you know, was just, you know,
he was such a powerhouse.
One of the heavies ever.
Yeah.
Musician, not even harp player.
Yeah,
you know, and that you have brought his repertoire back, and that you're able to get.
I love championing you know, somebody like James,
really,
because
I really admire you for doing that.
Yeah, he was really my main guy, man.
The last time I heard him was with Hubert Sumlin in Lucerne,
right?
Lucerne Blues Festival, and it was Hubert and James were up there together, and that was.
That's special.
That was
because those guys go back to being kids together.
Wow.
Yeah. In Arkansas and Mississippi. Okay. Yeah. They were a team before Wolf.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They created. They created the music, and
they did.
They were the ones that put the breadcrumbs out for everybody to follow and to right. kind of try to figure this stuff out. It's a nice.
Well, class. Thanks again,
good,
man.
Good talking with you.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear you tonight.
Likewise, man.
All right.
Good.
Okay.
All right.